Welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast. I am your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me, as always, is the, how did I describe you in take one? Radiant.
Great guy.
Great guy, all around. Great guy, Mr. Sean Nola Kirkland.
I am great.
Are you? Also in the house is someone I'd like to introduce, a name which is probably familiar with readers, the one and only Eric Blue Swim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, good. Awesome.
Yeah, we are good.
And join us later in the show will be Samurage, who's sitting out the first few minutes of the show as we fear your earbuds could spontaneously ignite from all this gaming goodness.
So I think she's getting her mohawk-ed.
Mohawk-ed.
She's taking care and spiking her hair.
Nice. I was just going to say she's getting her herded.
All right, rhymes aside, I think I said something about gaming. Sean, don't you like to game?
Sometimes I like to play a little Uncharted 3 multiplayer beta.
Tell me how that is.
It's really good. I played a good bit of Uncharted 2 multiplayer, but that was a long time ago.
Right.
I say long time ago. That was like, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
It feels very different. It feels a lot more frantic, but I can't really say exactly how since it's been so long since I played the first one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, really a lot of fun. I really can't wait for the full version because I'm tired of the two maps and the three characters you can play as.
Right.
But
what does it do new for multiplayer? I mean,
well, I've
heard that you have a partner.
Well, there's the modes you can play are free for all, team deathmatch, three team match, and I don't remember what the fourth one is because I haven't played it. But basically, the three team match is three teams of two.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you and a partner instead of you and, you know, four other people.
Sure.
Which are a lot of fun, but those more than any other sort of deathmatch mode, you really have to rely on your partner. So
mm-hmm.
it's not a lot of fun to play with a complete stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since it's still a PS3 game, so nobody has mics, and the people who do have mics are just breathing into them.
Let me hear your impression of that. That was really good. That was too good.
Probably gonna have to cut that part out.
I'm sure. I think we redlined it.
Yeah. But no, it's a lot of fun. I don't know how much longer the beta's going on, but if you can get on it, you should. There's a lot of confusion because so many people are putting codes up, but as long as you're in PlayStation Plus, you get it for free.
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
Get on that because you should all probably still have PlayStation Plus left over from the Welcome Back program.
And speaking of, let me throw in a push for PlayStation Plus owners or people that are using that. Alien Zombie Death is going to be free starting today on the 5th for PlayStation Plus owners. That's a PSP version of Alien Zombie Megadeth. So check that out. A game I really liked. The guys from Pom Pom probably coming on the show in a few weeks. So
yeah,
good stuff.
But I was trying to think what more I should say about the beta other than just go play it. But I'm not a big.
Is there 50 Nathan Drakes?
Right now, well, all the games are only I think they're 8-on-8, so there aren't 50, or maybe it's 8 total. Maybe it's 8 total.
Exaggeration.
So it's not 50, but it's 4 because for Hero, the only two models you can be are either Nathan Drake or what's his name? Sam, the old guy.
Yeah, the old guy. The guy nobody wants to be, yeah.
Yeah, so nobody's playing him except for me. And then you can play as the pirates, which there's two models, but there's more variation. Like, you can be, you know, Pirate A or Pirate B, and then you can be black or Mexican or white pirates. So there's at least some variation there, but everybody just picks the default model because...
You can be an Asian pirate?
Yeah, you can be... Well, it's just skin tone, so mm-hmm. you can be... slightly more tan pirate, but
aren't all pirates kind of tan? You know, they've been on
no
ships.
you can be a pasty pirate if you want.
I guess they work in the galley too long.
Yeah, but I like it because it's a lot more acrobatic than your average shooter.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more it's a lot more about traversal than just finding the good spot and camping out there. There's there's a lot of climbing up walls and, you know, getting to secret spots. There will be treasure moments where there are treasure boxes all over, and all of a sudden one of them will open up, and you can see it from wherever, and the first person who gets there gets the treasure, and there are treasure collections, so things will just randomly pop up, and I don't know if in the full version they're going to give you some sort of permanent benefit or bonus for having those treasures. Yeah, perk, yeah. Basically, the idea is that everybody's going to have their collection, and maybe in this game, the one thing you don't have just randomly pops up. You're gonna want to go book it over there, and then you find whoever picked it up. If you don't pick it up first, make sure you steal it from them so you have it by the end of the game. And that's a cool kind of meta dynamic that, yeah, you're playing a game, and yeah, the score is important, but even more important than that is this collection you have off to the side, and you want to finish that, and you're going to stick your neck out just to do that.
And it fits within Nathan Drake's universe.
Yeah, but it's weird that they have that in the beta because it doesn't keep track of that stuff. It's just like, look at this pocket watch. And you're like, I guess that's cool. Use a pocket watch, why not?
Is it wind up?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but so I was playing that a lot of that. And my girlfriend was watching it, and she's like, you're terrible at this. I could do better than that. And I was like, well, we'll teach you how to play single player in Uncharted 2. So I got her started on that, and she liked it up until the point where you have to start shooting people.
Which is 10 minutes in?
No, it's actually a lot further in than you'd think about it, because if you haven't played Uncharted 2 in a while, you start
you
start in their train wreck.
Yeah.
And then when you get out of the train wreck, you're sneaking up on people.
Yeah.
And then it isn't until, I think, like, Chapter 3 that you actually pull a gun out.
She may like that village where the soccer ball is. Then
that's pretty far into the game, though.
But you don't shoot anybody.
Yeah, that is true. You don't shoot anybody. But the thing she couldn't really get a hold of, and we were talking about this before the show, is that second stick to move the camera, because she had an N64 growing up, but she only played Mario Kart, and then she got a Wii, and she played a lot of stuff on the Wii, but she's never had to use that second stick, so jumping into it's really difficult. We were talking before the show about the move, and how the purpose of the move is not to get core gamers to use motion control. It's actually the other way around, to get people who are used to motion control into these core games.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a really good example of where I wish it could have been utilized, because she did get really frustrated with it, and I don't know if she'll pick it back up, but if there was a way to use more familiar controls, I feel like she would have really enjoyed it.
You think she'd like Vita? The one coming up, the Uncharted Golden, what is it, Golden Shower, Golden something?
Maybe, if they could figure out a way to get the cameras more intuitive. I mean, the cameras are very intuitive to people who are used to that second stick.
Right. I was thinking that touch option, where you can kind of tell the game where you want Nathan to go.
That wasn't what she was really having a difficult part. She was actually having a lot of fun navigating the train.
Oh, okay.
But it was moving the camera around. Like, we don't think about that, because for us that is intuitive, because we've been doing it for 15 years, I think, since the DualShock came out. No, maybe not quite 15, but a long time.
Right.
But jumping into it, using a second stick for the camera really isn't very intuitive.
Yep.
It's very unnatural, so I'd be really interested to see if the next Uncharted uses something similar to what SOCOM 4 did, because SOCOM 4's use of the move actually is really good. It works really well, as long as you're not using the sharpshooter, because then it works very terribly. Mm. But I'd be really interested to see how Uncharted 3 works with that. The beta, I don't think, uses it at all, but I'm hoping that the full version... I'm pretty sure they said something about that at E3, right?
I might have fallen asleep during that.
How do you fall asleep during the very beginning of the show?
Speaking of, at the beginning of the show, they had Nathan Drake cosplayers handing out sandwiches.
Did they?
I was overwhelmed, because there were like 15 Nathan Drakes buzzing around me. Asking me if I wanted Subway. Yeah, it was just like the multiplayer. So I was like, wow, I'm in the middle of it. But I didn't shoot anybody.
Yeah.
Speaking of shooting things, Blue, you been shooting anything off besides fireworks?
Ever since... The Ocarina of Time 3D came out.
Mm-hmm.
That has been sucking up my entire playtime as far as games go.
Really?
Going into it, you know, a couple of weeks before it came out, I had no interest in replaying it again. I mean, it's not that it's like a bad game or anything. I played the original on the N64 all the time. I loved it growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel that it was worth the $40 price tag. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I ended up putting about 30 and a half hours into it. I finished it up late last week. And I think my prediction was kind of on the money. It's a great game, but when you take the fact that it's like one of the greatest games of all time out of the picture and just look at the 3DS port,
mm-hmm.
it really isn't worth like the $30 price increase over the Wii Virtual Console version or tracking the other one down on eBay or the original down on eBay.
No.
But if you've never played the original though, do you think it's worth it? Because I mean, like, I honestly have not played Ocarina of Time, and it would actually be cheaper for me to go out. You know, there's a used game store down the street. It would be cheaper for me to go and buy an N64 and Ocarina of Time, but it's really rough looking.
Yeah, I mean, if graphics are a big issue for you, maybe it would be better to pick up the 3DS version. But if you can look aside from the graphics, they really didn't do enough to, in my eyes, justify the $40 price tag for the remake. They hardly justified a remake to begin with. It's pretty much just a new coat of paint on the same polygonal shapes as the N64 version.
Wind Waker and Twilight Princess up top. Anybody? No.
Twilight Princess was good. I love that one.
No, I was going to ask you, Blue, though, the polygons are still the same? They didn't do anything? They just threw new textures up?
For the most part, I mean, the character models look a lot better.
Okay.
It's mostly like the environment of, like, the Hyrule overworld.
Mm-hmm.
It still looks exactly the same as far as the polygonal shapes go as the original.
They actually did go and remake all those environments, but they did. They went through painstaking efforts to make sure it looked the same. But if you there's actually a comparison video where you watch the intro, and it's basically up to the part where Navi wakes up Link at the
mm-hmm.
beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that frame for frame, it's exactly the same until like maybe 5 seconds before the end. You can see where it takes the camera a little bit longer because the porch had to be a little bit deeper to make the 3D effect work. But up until then, it's like this looks like high res version of the game, and then like you can start to see little subtle differences where they had to change stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's like most of the changes are just subtle, you know, like the shop has added some more items to the, not items that you can buy, just items just around the shop,
mm-hmm.
solely for the purpose of the 3D effect, which I ended up hardly using. If you play the original and you are thinking about picking up a 3DS just for the Ocarina of Time remake, I really can't recommend it at that kind of a commitment.
Right.
But if you've never played Ocarina of Time, you do care about, you know, the graphics or having it on the go or whatever, it's a very good, it's still very good. I mean, even the motion controls in this work very well, better than I was expecting. Basically, you can use the 3DS's gyroscope to aim the bow and the slingshot and boomerang and stuff like that. By you know, tilting the 3DS up, down, left, right, basically just moving it like you were aiming the bow.
You know what though, like, it sounds goofy when you say it, but I can actually imagine tilting the screen up for a slingshot game and then drawing it back with the stylus and then shooting it. I actually feel like that would be fun.
Well, you know, this is one of the motion control is optional. You can go into the options menu and turn it off. But for the most part, I mean, 15 hours in, I was still using it, and I ended up, you know, turning it off for a little while because I wanted a more traditional experience. But after that, you know, after about maybe another 3 to 5 hours, I ended up turning it back on again, and I actually thought that was one of the things that the 3DS port did that was actually a little better than the original version.
Mm-hmm.
It also made the boss fight with Ganondorf at the end before, and not like final boss Ganon where he's got the two swords and the castle's been destroyed and stuff like that. spoilers.
you defeat Ganon?
But I found that the motion control aiming actually made the Ganon boss fight almost too easy, in my opinion. I mean, when I played it on the original 64, that thing was a bitch. And but when I played it with this, it's like, after you as you're playing against Ganon, you have to, or he'll like shoot like some sort of an energy ball at you, and you kind of go back and forth ping ponging, and then eventually his timing is thrown off and he gets hit with it, and then you use that window of opportunity to shoot him with a light arrow, and then when he falls down to the center pylon, you use the long shot to hook onto him, pull yourself over to the middle, and start wailing on him with the sword. Mm-hmm. But and after that, he starts getting really, you know, he kind of goes like through an anger spell, and he's a lot more aggressive. He uses this like downward fist motion, or you know, like a downward fist electrical attack or something like that. And the window of opportunity to hit him when he's charging that attack up, that's your window of opportunity to hit him with a light arrow, is when he's charging that attack up. And with the motion control aiming, I never experienced that attack. I hit him perfectly every time he went to hit that attack.
Hmm. Well, a lot of that too. I noticed this playing Shining Force 2 weeks ago. A lot of those things that were a lot harder the first couple times you did it, they just get easier with age. I beat Shining Force 2, which is one of my favorite games, for the first time 2 weeks ago, because there's this one battle I could never get past, and I don't know. It was super easy this time. I don't know what I was doing differently, but it just, I guess, in time, my brain grew.
How about the water? What is it, the Water Temple?
Water Temple was, I think they redid it subtly. It's been several years since I went through the original, so I couldn't point to something and say, oh yeah, that's definitely different.
I remember that one was kind of a bitch.
Yeah, I ended up stopping playing Ocarina of Time on the 64 when I was growing up, because I couldn't get through that damn thing.
Yep.
Now they did add like this, like a glowing column to indicate like the water level or where you're supposed to go to change the water level, I think. But other than that, it just pretty much like usual to me. Hmm. But I actually got through it. I mean, I had to marathon that. When I was playing it there, when I was playing Ocarina of Time 3D, I made sure that I sat down and played whatever temple I was going into front to back all in one sitting, because I think that was part of my problem growing up with the original Ocarina of Time, is that I'd play a temple a little bit, then I'd stop, then I'd pick it up again a couple of days later, then I'd stop again, forget what I was doing.
And then you'd be lost. Yeah.
Exactly.
You gotta draw a map, too. Oh, Sean. Drawing maps.
Three.
But one thing, I should mention the 3D effect a bit. And honestly, in the cutscenes, it looks really good. Like when they're talking about the origins of the Triforce, there's like some rays of light and rain or whatever floating downward towards the screen. And with the 3D on, that looks very, very good. But when you're just playing the actual game, the extent of the 3D experience that I noticed was you'd have the game itself in the far back. The maps, you know, there's like a map and like a, I guess it's the A button indicator, you know, swing or grab or whatever. You'd have those on the top screen, and they were a little further forward than the rest of the screen was. But unless something was like up in your face, you wouldn't really notice the 3D effect beyond the two little map, the map and the A button indicator. I did notice one thing that this, I noticed this at the fishing hole, the Lake Hylia fishing pond, that sucked up more time growing up than the actual game itself did. I messed around with the slider a bit, and I noticed that there was more reflection, I guess, from the moon or whatever on the lake water that with the 3D on than when the 3D was off. Hmm. That was one of the few differences between, that was like one, about the only difference I noticed between having the 3D on and the 3D off.
Have you ever seen, kind of a side note, the one thing I was kind of surprised is I played Excitebike recently, and when I was moving the slider, the remake for 3DS, when I was moving the slider, it actually changed the depth of the game. So there is a, you know, switch there where, you know, the 3DS can actually tell.
Yeah, because I always just kind of assumed that was one of those, like, it was just a lens thing.
Yep.
Like, it was just in the screen, but I guess that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it's actually putting out something that the hardware could read.
That was one 3D experience I played a lot of the original growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw when I hit the 3D slider for the first time, and I saw that the racetrack just start scaling into the background, and you could actually see like the lights and the sky for the in the stadium, I was amazed by it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'd pay. I think the normal price for the 3D classics is like $5.99. I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd pay that much for it, but $3 to $4. Yeah, I mean, it's if they gave. Another game, that kind of attention,
right?
Or, you know,
Can I admit, mm-hmm, I just bought Black and White Kirby for the GBA for $4 last week?
So, $4 seems like a fair price for that, though.
Really? Yeah, I figure if I pay $4 for an old Black and White GBA game, then $6 doesn't seem that excessive for, you know, a remake.
Yeah.
That.
Did you buy Donkey Kong 94?
You betcha. Of course I did.
when that hit the virtual console, I grabbed my my original copy and I started playing it. Damn, that thing's good.
Yeah. I lost my speed because I used to be able to clear, I don't know, 15, 20 levels, you know, where it starts off kind of arcadey and then it throws the puzzle things at you. I mm-hmm. was dying on like the fourth level, third or fourth level. I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't played this in a while. Need to pick it up my skills again.
That's a damn tough game too.
All right, but we should probably take a quick break because Sage is calling and she's probably got things she wants to talk about too.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, hello.
Sage, we're going to jump right in.
Good.
What have you been playing?
Well, I played a lot of Plants vs. Zombies on my Android phone this week.
Ah, okay.
Which I like a lot. I'm not usually into the on-the-phone games, and I usually am sort of underwhelmed by them. But actually, I find nothing wrong with it. It's a really good game.
Right. Can I throw in, because I never mention a iOS game anymore, and I know people give me shit, but Coin Drop for iOS. It's a lot like Peggle. The difference is you're not throwing it in a direction. You're just kind of dropping it, and then you can bump the things up. But it runs really well on my archaic 3G phone. Yeah, and runs just spotless. And it's a really fun game, and it was free. And I've been playing the hell out of it.
No, I want to make fun of that. I can't tell you how much time I spent playing those stupid pachinko games in Shenmue. So,
how about a game of Lucky Hit?
Yeah, Lucky Hit, that's what it was. How about a game of Lucky Hit? Okay.
Anyway, not a great game. Not a great game to talk about too much, because I'm sure everyone's probably played it by this point. You haven't played it?
I'm like one of two people on the planet that hasn't played Plants vs. Zombies at some point.
I had not played it. In fact, the only reason I got it and played it is because it was free. Android is doing all these, like the Amazon App Store and everything is doing all these free deals just sort of throughout the summer, I think. And it was free one day. So I was like, well, hell, I'll download it if it's free. And I'm actually, like I said, I'm really happy with it. I was not big on hopping on the bandwagon for that kind of game,
but it had that adorable sunflower song.
yes, that's true. It doesn't match up to the Portal 2 song, but yes, it does have a sunflower song.
Now, does it still have the Michael Jackson zombie in it?
I think they took those out. I think once he died, it became a really disgusting joke.
So they actually had a Michael Jackson zombie? Because now they have a disco zombie. I don't know if that's like sort of like him. Or
I think that's supposed to be him, yeah.
Because the disco zombie is still there, and he raises the dead around him, which is really, really bad.
Yeah, that's Michael.
Well, no, he's still there. He has a big afro. You would never confuse him with Michael Jackson. So maybe that's...
Maybe during the Jackson 5 years.
Actually, he does raise 4 other zombies. So there you go. There are 5 of them.
Oh boy, 5 zombies.
Anyway,
that was frighteningly good.
are you good at impressions?
I can bust out a good Michael Jackson once in a while.
awesome.
Has anybody seen Macaulay Culkin?
Oh, I don't like it. Guys are terrible.
Okay, as we slide downhill, you play anything else, Sage?
Right. Anyway, I looked at L.A. Noire a little bit. I played it a little bit. It does take sort of a time commitment to get through the tutorial and everything. But I played a little bit of it on my own game, and then I played a little on my brother's game because he had further along, so I could sort of play the open world kind of mode where you're just driving around. And I like the rendering a lot. Mm-hmm.
This sounds like it's going to a butt. It sounds like it's ending in a butt.
There's some pros and cons. The rendering's great. The facial, you know, depictions, all that emotionality looks really good. Sound is fine. The graphics are good. But
there it was, but let's get to the butt.
But on the other hand, like most Rockstar games, like every Rockstar game, it's like you can't really drive very well or very accurately. And in this game, you actually have to pay for any damage you do, mm-hmm. which sort of invites you to get your AI character, your partner, to drive the car. And I'm kind of against any game mechanics that make it more worth your while to have the AI character do the game playing for you, because I think that takes away from the game.
Well, I think that there's two kinds of games stuffed into L.A. Noire, and you might not want to play both of them. Mm-hmm. I think that's an okay design decision. I applaud them for saying you don't have to play the parts you don't want to play.
I didn't have any problems at all driving. You know, I'd every once in a while a few fender benders, but when I was under control.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. The controls just didn't feel, they felt a little too like sluggish and non-responsive to me. But maybe, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's just me.
Well, it's also my understanding that the shooting and the driving and all that stuff was not shoehorned in. But it wasn't the focus. It was something that they, you know, a couple years down in development, they were like, well, you know what? There are going to be people that expect a gamier game from Rockstar, so why don't we add these driving and shooting parts, and then we'll make them skippable because that wasn't the focus of the game. The focus of the game is Phoenix Wright in the 40s.
And my impression of it was that they expected a larger audience and one that may not have been accustomed to the mechanics and kind of the grammar of shooting and, you know, running, chasing people and driving around. So I thought it was really simplified.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with the fact that your AI character can drive the car. Like, that's fine. And trust me, having played Halo back in the day, it's a delight that your AI character is not going to drive you off of a cliff, generally. and that he's actually a pretty good driver. That's all fine. And I think that having the option there is really cool. But the problem that I have is that I felt when I was driving, like, it was not... it was not reasonable. It wasn't realistic enough. It wasn't functional enough for me to drive it. And so even if I wanted to drive, since I don't want to lose money, I'd rather have my AI character drive, sure. Even if I felt like driving.
You know what is kind of funny is when you're having a conversation, you just decide to veer off a cliff. Like, you're having a conversation about something, the guy will be saying, oh, that's a damn shame. And as you're going off a cliff, like, his voice doesn't raise or anything. There's, like, no excitement in his voice as he's about to die. Yeah, I love doing that over and over.
You'd think they would have, like, programmed in, like, some sort of, like, a dialogue interruption for, like, oh, shit!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, especially, it would have been nice because they do respond to other things. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they are programmed to respond to certain things, but then the fact that they're plummeting to their death, maybe they think you'll save them. Maybe they're just not concerned. So anyway, but it seems like, I mean, I don't want to pass any particular kind of thoughts on it until I've played more of the game, but just from a beginning standpoint, you know, the plot line, I've heard that the plot line gets really dumb by about the third act sort of mode, but the plot line so far seems fine, and the graphics are really good, the sound is fine, and it's funny that if you accidentally almost hit someone, your partner ends up being like, do you know that you almost hit that person? Because, you know, watching, like, my brother started playing, and he decided to go on a rampage and just run everybody over for fun,
So your brother's one of those people who likes Rockstar games.
No, that's the funny thing. He's really not into Grand Theft Auto or anything, but I think that it was because he's a cop, and it was late at night, and he was playing in open mode, so he was like, you know what, fuck it, I've been helping these people all damn day. So he just started driving around running them over, and his partner was like, did you know that you just tried to hit that person? Yes, I know. It didn't work, but I tried to hit him really hard. So the commentary is amusing from your partners. I don't have any problems with any of that. I just don't like the driving.
Okay, fair enough.
And I don't like that you can't choose not to hunt someone down. Like, there was the one where there's a guy fighting. It's a guy and his wife are on the roof, and they're fighting with this other guy, and the other guy accidentally falls off the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, like, a reconciliation between the woman and the dude, and they're going to live happily ever after because they were fighting. That's a good thing. And then you show up, and the guy panics and runs. And I don't really want to shoot him, chase him down and arrest him because it was an accident. You know, he didn't really mean to throw the guy off the roof, and I'm okay with that.
You know what, though? Manslaughter is still a crime.
Yes, I know, but that's the problem with playing as a police officer, is I don't really agree that he should have to go to jail when the other guy basically threw himself off the roof. He just happened to be in a wrong place at a wrong time.
You wouldn't say that if you were married to that guy, or if it was your brother. You'd have been like, what the fuck were you doing fighting with my brother on a rooftop?
And if the guy was like your brother, threw himself off the roof and I knew he was telling the truth, I'd be like, well, then I guess my brother's a dumb shit, and that's too bad.
How'd they even get into the fight on the roof? Don't most people usually get into fights like on the ground or in a hotel room or something?
That's why people say take it outside.
It's starting to sound like murder.
No, they live in the apartment building, and they were, and she, it's, the guy who falls off the roof is a black guy, and she and the black guy are on the roof talking, and the other guy comes up, Whitey McCracker, comes up to the rooftop. And Whitey McCracker and the black guy start getting into a fight, and they get near the edge, and the black guy, like, sort of rolls off the edge on his own into a pickup truck. And then he's like, baby, I'm so sorry, and I hate that you've been away from me. And she's like, oh, I had no idea you feel this way. And it's a really nice moment, and then you show up, and he's like, oh, shit, and he runs away. And then
this is textbook manslaughter right here.
It's
first-degree manslaughter. This is criminal negligence.
Okay, but even if
you might be able to throw in, like, race crime, too.
Yeah. But this is the 40s. There's no such thing.
There is no. It's a really not PC game. If you have any politically correct sensibilities, which I do not, but if you have any, you should not play this game because they definitely play it very realistic to the times in terms of black people and dames and. But there's a lot of like. Dames. There's a lot of.
It's like that one episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine all over again.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, there's a lot of crimes and stuff that are perpetrated by black guys, or, like, there's names of missions that are even sort of politically incorrect, which, I mean, I don't care, and they're not, like, offensive. They're not using the N-word as, like, a, you know, ready tag or anything, but it does dance that line of being politically incorrect, so if that bothers you at all, you shouldn't play the game.
That's kind of Rockstar. That's their bread and butter, you know?
Well, yeah. And that I like about them. Honestly, I like that I like what they come out with, and I like that they're unapologetic about the content of their games. I just wish they would hire some people that would make their games a little more sophisticated in the controls department. That's it. That's my only complaint with Rockstar Games.
And you will get another one because they fired Team Bondi. Going to break them up, according to reports.
Yeah,
that's what everyone says, that they're on the outs.
So, really?
That
sucks. Huh.
You playing anything else, Sage?
I want to talk to Deagle about what he's been playing.
Fine, then never mind what I've been playing. Deagle, what have you been playing?
I've been playing the hell of a lot of Dynasty Wars clones.
Yes!
But I'm not going to talk about
it.
Well,
no, I wanted to talk about Gundam, just so I could bring up Gundam Side Story again.
Because I know I'm getting enough hate mail. And no, I'm Gundam. Sorry, I enjoy Dynasty Warriors Gundam 3.
I haven't gotten a lot.
I enjoyed the first one.
I was going to say I didn't enjoy the first one, but I actually think. I've played very sweet little bit of it. But this one, just the fact that it looks so much better is enough for me to make this one enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dynasty Warrior games, where they're actually their strength is that they are so mindless and repetitive and easy to pick up that you can really wrap a real story around that. And I think for a licensed game like this, it makes sense to make it Dynasty Warriors-y. Like I said, it is monotonous and grindy, but the controls work. They're the same controls of every Dynasty Warrior game. And it's a good-looking Gundam game with, you know, characters that you'll recognize if you like that sort of thing. And I think that's all you can ask for from this.
Right. The two things that hold it back, I think, are email. I don't think email's ever interesting to read in-game.
That is true.
And boss fights. I think for the Dynasty
Warriors... boss fights are ever interesting in games.
No, well, that could be argued. I'm not a huge proponent of boss fights. But I think in the Dynasty Warriors universe, where it was geared towards, you know, kind of a 1 versus 100 mentality, the boss fights just don't work. They're boring, they're monotonous,
Unless it's a boss fight that takes advantage of that, like the boss fight that, you know, it's summoning legions of robots or something at you.
Yeah.
Or some sort of projectiles that you can take out on your way to them or something like that.
The one improvement I really liked about Gundam is the whole idea is every once in a while he'll knock over a guy and he'll die in this pink explosion that can set off a chain reaction. And that, to me, just the simple, I love chain reactions in games. I think that's a fascinating element. I think in Just Cause 2, that's what really kind of hooked me in. And I really think that's a great addition to this. Of course, it may not work with, you know, humans blowing up. I'm not sure. Talk about suicide bombers.
You got blood on me. I'm dead now.
Maybe the aliens. I don't know. No, it definitely works in this game. And on that side note, also been playing a little bit of Bleach, Soul Resurrection, and which I really enjoy. I'm surprised how much I enjoy it. Imagine, yes, the Dynasty Warriors kind of tactic, but you have this infinite dash, and this dash allows the game to really pick up the pace a little bit. It feels like in Vanquish when you're sliding on your knees, and you can do that all the time. You can just hold the button. You can cruise into enemies.
So it's like Wet.
Yeah, a little bit. which I like, too. Didn't she stop cruising on her knees after a while?
Yeah, but then you just
got hurt again. Initiated.
Can we stop using the phrase cruising on her knees? I really think I could be mistaken for something else.
No, but have you played Wet? Because it's exactly that is the most descriptive phrase of it. You drop down on your knees and you slide around.
Yeah, but I just want you to understand that what you just said is when Wet, you drop down, she drops down on her knees and slides around. I mean,
it's all right. We got the mature tag. We can talk about these things. So.
Oh, yes. No.
But Bleach definitely looks pretty solid, play solid, and it's surprisingly deep from what I can talk about and what I've seen so far. And it's kind of a weird game because right now I got a preview copy, and they say you can talk about levels 1, 2, 5, 7, 9, and so I'm real hesitant on what I can talk and not talk about. So
can I say something not about Bleach, about not being allowed to talk about stuff? That makes me really upset.
That it's stupid.
You don't know what grinds my gears?
What grinds your gears?
So the game that I was most excited about at E3 was Solitaire Robo, right? We saw that from XSEED. They gave us a little piece of paper.
Space Marine.
And Space Marine. That's true. But one of the ones I wanted to talk about was Solitaire Robo. Mm-hmm. They said we couldn't until the end of June.
Right.
And so I didn't, but another website, which I'm not going to name, basically what they did was they covered it, but they just stuck the word rumor in there a couple times.
I saw that.
Had all the information about the game. Basically, there was no way they could have gotten this. And I know they were at E3, and, you know, XSEED is their bread and butter just as much as it is ours. But it just pissed me off so much that we were being good, and they were like, rumor has it that Solitaire Robo is coming out.
Here's another article, rumor. That starts with an S?
No, it starts with a T.
Oh, then maybe not.
Then there are two.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure there are more than one.
I saw another website that I actually enjoy, and they kind of did that same thing.
Well, I enjoy this website, too, but it just really irked me that they were like, I know how we'll get around this. We'll just say it's a rumor. They can't get mad at us if I don't know.
That line of, like, integrity in journalism is really tricky, but I think that will end up biting people on the ass because... later, you know, when XSEED turns around, they'll be like, we asked you not to talk about this, and you did, so we're not going to trust
you. But
I disagree with that because of the Kotaku Call of Duty...
Modern Warfare 3.
Modern Warfare 3, that huge leak, and Activision is probably really happy about that because that pushed so many pre-orders. You know, the next day, people were running out.
Well, publicity is good publicity.
But I think it depends on the. I think it depends on the company, right? I mean, because some companies might not actually want. Some companies will want it to leak out, and they don't care because it'll get them the publicity. But some of them maybe like not all of their, you know, sort of restrictions are settled, or maybe they aren't for sure on their release date yet, and so they don't really want people hyping it up yet because maybe it's not quite ready to come out. So I think it would depend on the company. And Activision is a bunch of D-bags anyway, so...
Well, I can also see some shady sister site action going on. Like, let's say website A has a meeting with Xseed, and they say, oh, well, you can't talk about this. So they go to website B and say, hey, here's everything I heard, and then what did you hear that you can't talk about? I'll talk about that on my website. You talk about this on your website. We'll both say it's a rumor, and they can't really track it back to either one of us.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's lame. So to those of you who do that out there, one, you're lame, and two, you should shut up, and three, all those companies like Xseed should keep in mind that we here at Tech Gaming actually do what you would like us to do.
Yeah, actually, I did talk to the PR rep, and I asked him, hey, when does the date come up on this? And he's like, hey, thanks for honoring it. Like, yeah. Kind of like, see? You're idiots. Yeah, but there was the whole thing like, oh, someone honored it. So.
Well, I don't know. I think that it's better to get a good reputation for yourself than to... I mean, so what if we're not the first people to talk about it? If we get a good reputation because of how we do business, right. I think that's better.
And one thing that is... I heard possibly a rumor, speaking of Bleach, is that NIS may throw in a couple of episodes online on the PSN, which is kind of cool, I think, being that that's a Viz property. So well, I'm not. He said that to me. I'm not sure if that's press or if everybody buys it.
Like, they got to do. Cool. They got to do something about that store though, because it's way too expensive.
Episodes of anything.
Go ahead, Sean.
I was talking about it before that I wanted to. When I was getting back into Evangelion, I wanted to watch it on my PSP because that was back when I used to carry that around with me everywhere. But it cost. I could have bought the DVD set three times for what it cost to buy all the episodes on PSN.
Wait, how much was an episode?
That makes sense.
An episode to buy or rent?
You can't rent episodes of everything. You can't rent episodes of most anime.
Okay, how much to buy?
I want to say it's like $2 or $3 an episode. The box set goes for $30 now, brand new.
I've seen it for, 25.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's unacceptable that, hey, this thing that you can only use on, two formats, really, or I guess three, because you can also watch it on your PC if you use MediaGo, it costs more than a DVD, which you can use on, everything.
Yep.
But the other thing is that any website, device you have that allows you to connect to those websites, you can watch all those episodes online for free.
Yeah, well, I mean, But I like giving money to those companies that are now out of business because people went and watched that shit for free.
Yep. No, sure. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to offer a service on a device that you can use to go get the episodes for free, there has to be some amount of incentive there, or else it needs to be cheap enough that you feel good about paying it without feeling like, but I can't really afford this.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, we got way off track from video games.
Jump back here. So what else I've been playing here after Dynasty Warrior? So I'll try to make it quick. No, I know last week Blue Swim and Cheap Ass Gamer, they alerted me to Toys R Us $15 sale on certain 3DS games. So I made my way down to Jeffrey's Pen and picked up two titles, Rabbids Travel in Time 3D and Splinter Cell 3D. And so one I enjoy, and the other I really want to enjoy, but the game...
I bet I know which one is which.
Yeah, but the game won't seem to let me love it. First is Rabbids, which despite earning a review score, I think it got a 4.0 on IGN. It's a serviceable little 2D platformer. The game, obviously, it owes a lot of the grammar and language of the Super Mario Brothers, because players jump, you go from left to right, you jump across, swinging platforms, these green kind of pom-pom things. I don't know what they are. You hop on heads, the occasional enemy, you slide down inclines. It's got all that. Now, the problem with the game is that it doesn't change time periods often enough for something that's based on, travels in time. You only go forward, and there's only four distinct eras. So close to 30 levels in the game, I've only seen two eras, which are the prehistoric period and ancient Egypt. prehistoric period is about 20 levels, including, I think, bonus levels. The one thing, you can replay, each level, which I was doing for a little bit, but it felt a bit stale because you could either do a, kind of a time run, or you can pick up all the collectibles. Now, doing those things does secure you, like, additional credits, things that, where you can get these collectibles, which are 3D figurines. So, all in all, I mean, the game is not worth $40 by a long shot, but for 3DS owners who want a platformer, I really don't think there's too many 2D platformers. Are there any 2D platformers? I know Raymond is 3D.
There's Excitebike.
Okay. Is that a platformer?
And Kirby's Dream Land.
Yay.
Oh, okay. So modern platformers in color. Anyway, if it drops below the $20 mark, I'd recommend a pickup for people that like those games. Now
is there a lot of rabid screaming in there?
No, surprisingly, there's not a lot. There's a strange thing at the very beginning where you come out of the washing machine and it says you can hit A to skip it, but it's really innocuous. It doesn't scream a lot. They don't do anything. I mean, they do have the costumes right now. My rabbit's a geisha, and I'll probably leave it on that. There's different costumes to pick up and stuff like that. But no, it's not heavy on the ears. The music does sound a little bit like Girls Gone Wild, though. Take that into account.
Awesome.
So anyway, Splinter Cell 3D. Like Sam Rage, I'm a fan of the Sam Fisher. I think I've beaten every Splinter Cell title at least once. So this one's a remake of Chaos Theory. And, you know, when I heard it was available for a portable system, less than $20, you know, I kind of jumped at the chance. Note that I didn't jump like Sam Fisher, because in this game it would have meant that I press up on the directional pad, which isn't very intuitive. So, yeah, the controls are pretty cumbersome. A lot of the time you scroll through a list of options to open a door instead of just choosing maybe an icon, which is really annoying. It throws me kind of out in the game. But that's not the only sacrifice. One of the things you have to do is use the face buttons to look around, and you almost always have to play Splinter Cell in a darkened room. You know, you got to be in the dark, much like Sam Fisher. There's no gamma setting, so I couldn't get stealthy in a moderately lit office because I couldn't really see what's going on. The other problem is Sam himself. It's a third-person game, and he takes up a significant amount of screen real estate. So my first hour with Splinter Cell, it kind of played out like this really bad spy comedy. Like I knifed a guy in the dark. That first guy was on the bridge, and then I was going to dump his body.
Did you die a couple of times trying to take him down when you first started out?
No, not at all. I killed him. You know, stuck my knife in it, I think his neck, if I could see, and then I went to the ravine to kind of dump him off, but I couldn't really see where the ravine edge, and so we both fell down together. Embracing each other. So not the way Sam Fisher goes out. But anyway, the camera's really tight. I think they did that, for the small screen. And there's just so many sacrifices.
Probably for the 3D, too.
Yeah, there's just so many sacrifices with this game. So the one thing is there's the writing on the wall, from Conviction. So, if you're into that, I guess pick up Splinter Cell. But I'd advise most people to kind of sit this one out, even if you're hardcore.
When you have to scroll through to, like, open a door or something like that, does it pause the game, or is it still real time?
No, it's still real time. But most of the time in Splinter Cell where you're doing that, the guys are just kind of chatting away anyway.
No, it's true, but every now and then you'd end up, especially as the games went on and got a little more contact-based, every now and then you'd be sort of not running from someone, but sneakily running from someone who's chasing you, and you need to go back in a room. But you're saying that it keeps it real time,
yeah,
so you might.
It is real time. I haven't got too far in the game, but it seems like they dumbed down the AI a little bit from.
More? What? Yeah. That's terrible.
Oh, and did I mention no spies versus mercs? So the final nail in the coffin. Good night, Sam.
So it sounds sort of like a shit show.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's all poop all the time. So, $16 admission.
Damn poop.
Well, I picked it up at the Toys R Us sale as well. Yeah. I picked it up with that Ghost Recon, Shadow War, and The Sims 3. Mm-hmm. And this is the second time I've bought Chaos Theory on a DS portable. There was a port of Chaos Theory.
I remember
on
that.
Original DS, and it was it. Put it this way, compared to Splinter Cell, on the original DS. The one on the 3DS is light years ahead of it.
Sure.
The camera controls were on the touch screen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
On the original one, and it was.
If anything, it does show that the 3DS is capable of using the Unreal Engine, not half bad. So it's not a total washout. Yes. So that's your admission for going to the poop show. Last thing. Yes, Sage.
No, nothing. I was just going to say that's so unfortunate because, you know.
Sam deserves better, definitely. The last thing I want to talk about is Galaga Legions DX, which I'm hearing a lot of talk comparing Galaga Legions DX to Pac-Man Championship DX. And I got to say, don't believe the hype. Galaga Legions, it's a very good shooter, but it doesn't really compare to what I thought was the brilliance of Pac-Man DX. Part of the problem is the new Galaga. It has to compete with a field of very proficient twin-stick shooters. There's that one that Sega is putting out this summer that I really liked.
Binary Domain?
No. The ones by the guys that made Just Cause. Forgot the name right now. Gatling Gears was really good, too. There's a lot of them coming out this summer. And so, as a mechanic, of placing drones on the field, that changed a little bit to now you can, instead of them just shooting in different directions, you have control with the right stick. Now, Pac-Man, on the other hand, it doesn't have a lot of, maze-oriented contemporaries, and so it kind of feels a little bit more fresh. Now, one of the main problems, or the other problems I have, is with the Galaga bombs. And these are things where, if you play the original, you can see the screen highlights the kind of direction or the path that the enemies will take. And mixed in there, there's one that's kind of highlighted. And if you shoot that, they explode, killing any nearby enemies. And it's a cool mechanic, but I haven't really uncovered a reason not to shoot them. So every time I just go for the Galaga bombs. Which tends to simplify the game dramatically. I know, Pac-Man DX, it had that interesting kind of risk-reward mechanic where you say, should I go longer and eat this power pellet, or, should I just wipe these out now? And there was that constant threat. And this one, it seems a little bit more simplistic. And so it's solid, it's definitely fun. There's so much going on the screen that you are immersed in it, but it's just not at that same level as the earlier game. So that's what I've been playing in a nutshell.
How much is Galaga Legions anyways?
$10.
Is it 15?
I'm pretty sure it's 10. And it does come with that weird kind of, not even trivia, which we're going to talk about in a second, trivia. But it has kind of the background. If you hit the Y button, it kind of loads that real slowly, but it gives you a little background from the developers on that, which is kind of cool. I dig that stuff. I was always a fan in the Namco Museum series when they had the... supplemental material.
I'm a fan of
interviews
with Martin.
Martin who?
Yeah.
Lawrence.
No, well, unfortunately, we don't have Martin Lawrence or Gina, but we do have Martin Ray, who's the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences president, and he's going to talk about art and games.
All right, let's do that.
With me.
Yay!
My favorite thing.
Hello, listeners. I'm here with Martin Ray, the president of the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences. Now, if the Academy sounds familiar, that's because they're the agency behind both the DICE Summit and the Interactive Achievement Awards, which are distributed at the conference. Now, today, Mr. Ray is going to talk about the accomplishments and future of Into the Pixel, an exhibit of some of gaming's finest art. So, welcome to the show, Martin.
Thank you.
Let's just hop right into things. And sure. If you could tell me about how Into the Pixel got started, some of its origins.
Sure. Yeah. It's 8 years old now, and that may not sound like a long time, but in our industry, we're a relatively young industry. So 8 years is a long time. A lot of things can change. Consoles can recycle the whole deal. So about 8 years ago, the ESA, Electronic Software Association, and the Academy really looked at the industry, and it was apparent that there was a lot of talk about the the artistry around video games not being art, and it was digitally created and wasn't really fine art, and a lot of discussion around that. And mm-hmm. and we looked at it and said, absolutely not, and people need to understand more of what goes into the art and who's involved. And so we created Into the Pixel, which is a jury-selected celebration and award for some of the best art in video games. And you know, since its inception 8 years ago, the exhibits every year, they tour the world, and it's been a real eye-opener for a lot of people in the art community and the game community.
That's cool. Now, from what I understand, there are only, 16 works that are entered into each year's ITP gallery, right?
You know, it fluctuates. Okay. We had 17 this year, and what we do is we do a call for submissions, and obviously we have 22,000 members in the Academy and you know, all the big game companies, and we do a call for submissions, and both through the press and through our companies, and we have hundreds and hundreds of submissions. And what we do is we put a jury around it. We call it a jury because we do it much like the fine art world does, and we mix it up. We mix it up with individuals from the video game art community, interactive entertainment art community, whether they're art directors or artists themselves, but people that are really involved in the process. And then we put people from the fine art community on the jury as well, Getty and the Smithsonian and art curators and even photographers in the past, and to give a different look to the judging process. And then those individuals go through all of the submissions and kind of select they winnow it down to kind of their top 30 or so favorites, and everyone else is on the jury. And then they go head-to-head over a series of a couple months and get down to the final selections. And this year there were 17 that we declared winners, and we unveil those at E3 every year.
Very interesting. Really interesting, I think, is do you guys have a particular rubric for determining the industry's kind of top artistic achievements? One of the things that I was interested in is I know the Academy, you guys empower kind of the smaller entities through you have the Indie Game Challenge contest and a distribution of a couple scholarships. But when, say, examining art from a particular game, does the jury consider, say, the studio size, or do they just evaluate maybe the quality of the output?
It's an interesting question. You know, from the Academy's perspective, we sponsor peers and experts to make their own judgments. And for example, there was a piece from Gears of War this year, and from Assassin's Creed, and there were pieces from Big Fish Studios on small games, and it doesn't matter. These people are looking for, in their opinion, and artists are obviously very subjective, in their opinion, what were the finest pieces submitted, and those are the ones that they're going to choose. So they're free to choose anything they want. I'll give you an example. Last year in our IAAs, our Interactive Achievement Awards are the finalists are chosen by peer panels, people who are game makers. And for example, Angry Birds was not nominated last year in any category. And people snicker about that. Is it a game? Is it not? Is it a handheld bite-sized piece? And so they looked at it, and these are game makers, you know, that have been in the business for a long time, and they said, absolutely not. Whatever it is, this was a compelling piece of interactive entertainment. And they wrote it in and made it a finalist, and that was a finalist in our Game of the Year category. And as the Academy president, I sit back and say, whatever game makers want to decide, I just protect the integrity of the process. And same with ITP. They can go any direction they want. They're artists in their own right, and they're used to looking at fine art, and they get to make the call.
Interesting. Now, one thing is, I think anyone who attended or followed some of the titles coming out of E3 this year will notice the industry's love affair with photorealism, which kind of stands against, I guess, some of the conceptions of art. Many of this year's winners or final picks were all stylized in some manner. Any comment on this?
No. I just think, two things, I think. When you look at interactive entertainment and you have the sheer horsepower of the consoles and the PC and the tools to create games, and you're trying to make a realistic experience that you can immerse a player in and lose that player to a real interactive experience, I think photorealism is a very powerful tool for that. Anyone who played Heavy Rain and instituted or injected themselves into the story and could dictate the way that story goes understands that. However, from an art perspective, art can go from the very abstract to the photorealistic, and I think that is purely a subjective thing. So I think they're trying to achieve, in some respects, different things. So it does not surprise me at all that many of the art pieces were more abstract. In fact, a couple of the art pieces, and you may not even know this, but a couple of the art pieces were actually concept art for games not yet produced, but they were compelling enough for the jury that they selected those.
Interesting. Now, one thing I want to touch on is, speaking of art and games, is a little bit of controversy. I think it was back in April last year, Roger Ebert proclaimed that games, and I think that this would infer the artwork which goes into games, the games themselves could never be art. Would you care to refute that thesis?
Well, it's an interesting, I've been asked similar things, off of that comment from Roger Ebert, and I would suggest that he does not have enough experience around the medium to be able to make that kind of statement. And I'll give you an example. 150 years ago, when photography was invented, people said photography, is not art. Not art at all. It's just merely making a copy of what appears in nature. It didn't take long for really creative people to gravitate toward photography and create an art form out of that. And film was spawned out of still pictures. And so you can make the argument, well, the early people said photography and film was merely making a copy of what occurs in nature, whether it's staged or not. But he would not argue that film is not an art form. And so I guess my statement back to Mr. Ebert would be, get more involved in the medium of interactive entertainment and games, and you will soon realize that it truly is an art form. And if you were to walk through the end of the Pixel exhibit, and what we do is we print them, frame them, and hang them in gallery-like settings, really as a juxtaposition to take them out of the video, the video game interactive format off a computer screen or a TV screen, and put them in that environment so that when people walk through, they look at it and go, "Oh my God, that is truly creative. That truly took a brilliant artist and a brilliant creative mind to make that." And they see it as fine art because it's in a fine art sort of exhibit. And I just tell Mr. Ebert, take a walk through into the Pixel and spend some time with the creators of video games, and I think he will start to equate them with film.
Good, great answer. Now, wrapping things up, if listeners wanted to see the ITP finalists or any of the work, where could they go, either online or in person?
Well, they could go to my website, or not my website, the Academy's website. interactive.org, and there will be a jump-off point at the end of the Pixel, and also endofthepixel.com, and they can see all the finalists.
Awesome. Do you have a? I'm not sure if you were on the jury itself, but did you have a particular favorite?
it's an odd piece, but there's a piece by Double Fine.
Okay.
and Microsoft, and actually the man's in an iron lung, and he has a contraption that allows him to smoke a cigar. It's very irreverent. And but it was a single piece out of a series of, I believe, 50, and they were having trouble with, as I hear it from the folks who designed the game, they're having trouble with where you go with a game. And they had some artwork around it, a couple of conceptual pieces, and they worked together and they said, give me 50 conceptual pieces around sort of pulp fiction. They're all book covers. Mm-hmm. Pulp fiction of the sort of 30s, 40s, and 50s, and where you would see the game. And they came up with 50 pieces of art that really defined how the game was going to go and how the game was going to be played. It really inspired the game designers. And so I think a little bit's the story, a little bit's the irreverence of the piece, but I kind of like that one.
Wow. I'm a fan of the Orcs Must Die. I like the one that kind of tells a story with it, and just the lighting is there.
It's very really nice.
Wonderful.
I'm supposed to be Switzerland, you know, and not have favorites.
Oops, we'll take that out later. well, Martin, let me thank you so much for coming on the show. And I know, and hopefully our listeners really appreciate you taking the time out of your workday to make an appearance and check out some of the fine artwork at the ITP exhibit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robert. It's a pleasure.
Great interview, wasn't it?
Was.
Yeah.
It was.
All right.
Let's jump into trivia. And today I thought I'd mix things up, and in the interest of time, what we're going to do is something a little bit different. I'm going to deliver a back-of-the-box quote, and you have to name the game. Got it?
All right.
Good.
Okay.
So number one, Banished, Left for Dead, but the hero refused to be forgotten. Is that from A, Left 4 Dead, B, Prototype, C, Crackdown, or D, Jack 3?
Jack 3.
Prototype.
I'm going to say Jack 3, too.
Correct answer, Jack 3.
Woohoo!
Damn.
Sorry, Sean. Come fearless, come strong, come packing. There's a lot of come there.
So
gun grave overdose, B, win back covert operations, C, the club, D, the Godfather 2.
Godfather 2.
I'm going to say Godfather 2 also.
Blue.
I think I'm going to say the club.
And you would be correct with the club.
Nice.
Awesome. Wow. 2 for 2. We got a new one.
On a roll.
Yeah. Justice never grows old. A, Crackdown 2, B, Wild Arms 4, C, Total Overdose, D, Maximo and the Army of Zen.
Maximo.
Yeah, Maximo.
Sean, you break my heart. That was
Wild Arms. Is it Wild Arms?
Wild Arms 4.
That's the only one I haven't played because it looks terrible.
That was for you, though. You should know the series. Okay. It's a revolution. Is that from A, Civilization Revolution, B, Fable 3, C, Dance Dance Revolution Extreme, D, Quake 3 Revolution, or E, Rayman 2 Revolution?
You said the word revolution way too many times.
I was going to say the Beatles Rock Band.
I think it's Fable 3.
The revolution will not be televised.
Sure, not Fable 3.
I'm inclined to agree as well.
Come on. You guys, really? Fable 3? That's the only one without revolution in the title. And you would be correct, Fable 3. It's a revolution.
For some reason, that kind of stuck in my head from seeing it in the store one time.
Huh.
Well, you know why that stuck in my head?
Because
you can't go 5 feet without some NPC being like, revolution, revolution, blah, blah, blah. That's why. That was sarcasm.
It was made by the French. Okay. Number 5. Their world, his rules. A, 50 Cent, Blood on the Sand. Sorry, 50. B, Assassin's Creed. C, Dark Sector. Or D, Ninja Blade.
I think it's Dark Sector.
I'm going to say Ninja Blade because I really don't want it to be 50 Cent.
I do want it to be 50 Cent, but I think it's Dark Sector.
I'm going to channel my inner gangsta and say 50 Cent.
You are the shit, Blue. 50 Cent.
No. Oh, I wanted it not to be.
I'm rolling on 24s, baby.
Oh my god, 5 for 5. Wow.
Jesus.
Wow. Oh, that was good.
I missed one.
Did you? Which one? Oh, Wild Arms. That's right. 4 for 5.
Yeah.
All you guys should hang yourself in shame for not knowing that one. Moving
Dude,
on.
Whatever. When I was brand new, I got all the trivia right, too. Don't worry, it'll wear off.
So the Wild Arms of the series I've been is the PS2 demo disc.
It's breaking my heart.
Yeah. Okay. So let's hit the mailbag, and we got a question from Nickel Nuts. What? Nickel Nuts asks, Joystick, Kotaku, or some other site?
For what?
I don't know. Well, that's all the question was from Nickel
If you
Nuts.
Look up Joystick and you look up Monster Hunter, you will find a review from Sean Nola.
Yeah. So.
So I'm going to say Joystick.
TechGaming.com.
Oh, give her a raise. Blue.
For me, it's a combination of Kotaku and Twitter.
Okay. That leaves me. I'm going to say Joystick for both the same reason that Sean said. And also, they have, I'm not sure Kotaku has an iPhone app, but Joystick has a mighty fine iPhone app, which, except for going into a state where you can't back out, is pretty snappy. So
I actually, to be perfectly honest, I have my Google Reader feed to follow any websites that will give me an abbreviated headline. Mm-hmm. So there's actually Joystick, Kotaku, Destructoid, all those big ones actually aren't on there.
Oh yeah, I think I have that too.
Silicon Era and Tiny Cartridge and what's the one that starts with A? I don't know, a whole bunch of them. They're all on my Google Reader feed, so I can just scan through headlines and pick whichever ones are interesting to me to read.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, I have. I think I have G4TV feed. Because it's one of the ones. Well, because it's no, but I'm just looking at my phone now. It's one of the ones that came on my Android because there's only so many game feeds on here. And then that was one of the ones that was just on here already.
Okay. Well, speaking of sticking, we got a question from Papa Poo Stick. So.
What the hell kind of name is that?
Well, he's
like, is it the father of a poo stick or the dad pooed on a stick?
Isn't that the poo stick from a kid? Isn't that the thing South Park?
Guess where fudgesicles come from.
Gross, man. Now you ruined them for me for the night.
I was going to say Eskimos. So why do you think almost every site has the same impressions about E3? Microsoft Kinect stuff failed to impress. Wii U failed to impress. Sony had a nice apology, winning lunch, and showing promise.
Yeah.
I've read 10 sites and listened to at least 10 podcasts, and they all say the same thing, which makes me question why I listen to so many shows.
Well, you probably this is the thing. I used to be just like you and listen to so many shows, and then I realized any show pointing at the core gamer is going to have a pretty similar opinion on most things.
On top of which, it's E3, so every show that went there probably has really similar impressions, not because even necessarily that they're the same shows, but I mean, they were all at E3, and Microsoft was disappointing, and Wii U did fail to impress, and Sony did have a nice apology and showed promise. So it's hard
I guess the question he's asking is, you know, is that homogeny? Maybe I'm reading into this. Is that homogeny natural, or do we kind of create it ourselves
by listening and
talking to each other?
Well, that point is true, but I'm going to guess that these 10 sites and 10 podcasts you listen to are all aimed at the core gamer. If he wants different opinions, he needs to diversify his podcast, right? Like, maybe mm-hmm. listen to entertainment podcast from a local newspaper or something. Maybe listen to mm-hmm. like, I like listening to the IGN, not their core podcast, Game Scoop or whatever it is, but I like listening to their Achievement Unlocked podcast and Podcast Beyond and mm-hmm. occasionally their Nintendo podcast, because those are like the fanboy podcasts. They're all going to be very optimistic, but you're going to get a very different opinion than you would from like a homogenized, hey, average core gamer, this is what we think. So it kind of gives you that different perspective. If you're listening to 10 podcasts and they've all kind of got the same audience in mind, they are going to have similar views. And like Deagle said, we all talk to each other. We all overhear conversations the show, and we're all affected by that. So when you're surrounded by other people who are disappointed in Microsoft's press conference, you can't help but look at that, say, why do they feel this way? And, oh, yeah, you know what? I can't argue with that. It was mm-hmm. pretty unimpressive.
Plus, I think that there's an amount of homogeny inherent to, like, your question revolves around systems and not games. And I think there's an amount of homogeny inherent to, integral to systems, having nothing to do with which podcast you listen to, because there's not as much variability in a system or in the system's company. So Microsoft as a company, there's not as much room for variability of opinion per se as for a particular title like Assassin's Creed. Because the games are a piece of art and a piece of mechanics that are composed differently per game. Like every game is somewhat different and everyone has a different opinion based on what kind of games they like, whether they liked this particular game, how this game was done, what mood they were in when they played it. Whereas things like the systems and the companies that represent them, such as Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo, and their corresponding systems, there's not as much variety there because the Wii is the Wii, and the stuff that comes out for the Wii is going to be the same kind of engineering and the same kind of philosophy behind it that it always has been. Same for Sony, same for Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it.
And for the record, Sage liked Mr. Caffeine.
And also for the record,
That's not true.
You're misrepresenting me. Okay. So as another point, not a lot of sites talked about Ubisoft. I have a very definite opinion on Ubisoft. Mr. Caffeine was not a likable guy. He's effective. He makes you remember who he is, and he has supercharged energy, so you do pay attention to what he's saying, even if you find... No. It's like using the right tool for what you're trying to do. He's very effective at getting you to pay attention, and I did say tool intentionally. He's a big tool.
You know who is even more effective than that, though?
No.
Joel McHale. That's who they had the last 2 years.
He was ineffective. Kind of limp.
Well, anyway, so Mr. Caffeine got people to pay attention to the games, and for the record, everything Ubisoft rolled out, like, I felt like there was pride there in what they were doing, and they had taken time and care, and, like, you could tell they loved what they were putting out, whereas Nintendo, they definitely love their stuff, too, so I won't say that about them, but a lot of the other press conferences, all the other press conferences that I went to didn't have that same, like, loving attention to detail, and it didn't feel money-driven, it didn't feel press-driven, it felt like this is something we love and we're going to share it with you because this is a press conference at Ubisoft, but the other ones felt like more,
money-grabbed-driven.
Yeah. Well, not money-grabbing, they just felt more driven by, like, hey, here's industry and money, and this is what we're doing because of it.
I never think what Microsoft does is for the artistry.
Never.
I just think it's about, hey, how can we make money? And that's
Halo
4, element.
Case in point. Yeah, but Halo 4, case in point, there's no respect for Bungie as a company and their decision to move forward anyway with the series.
Mm, okay. Well... that one might be argued. Okay. So.
Yeah, I'd say there's plenty of respect for Bungie to let them do their own thing, but they still own a money-making machine. They're going to use it.
Yeah.
And I think that makes you a douchebag.
Oh, the Disney douchebags for still making Mickey Mouse stuff after Walt Disney died?
It's different. Mickey Mouse.
No,
but
they're
Walt
douchebags
Disney
for dropping Black. What is it? Black Rock. The company that made.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's the same thing. They own a license. Bungie doesn't own the license. Bungie sold that license a long time ago.
Oh, that's true, but Walt Disney didn't say to them, in my opinion, Mickey Mouse is done. You should stop making him. He said, yes, this is great for children for forever, and I don't like Jewish people. That was what Walt Disney said. And Bungie said, we don't think you should continue to make any kind of Halo stuff. Oh, you guys don't know that he's anti-Semitic? I think that's a really funny fact about Walt Disney. He seems like this really nice guy, and he's totally anti-Semitic. He hated the Jews.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to get into the whole is Walt Disney anti-Semitic argument.
Sometimes you said to Microsoft, we think
it was
should
that
be
swastika on Mickey's armband that was the giveaway. Did you guys see that? Okay. No. So one last question.
Isn't there an achievement in Disneyland Adventures where you have to like? Do something to get like a Nazi logo for your avatar or something like that?
No way.
Anyway, moving on from the Disney.
DRC, you got me all up here.
Stop.
What?
Are you still recording?
Me? Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Skype recorder just crashed.
All right. Still recording. Moving
on. All right, good.
DRC, how often do you buy or purchase things digitally versus buy them at retail stores?
I buy a lot more digitally than I do at stores.
Yeah.
I probably buy something every week digitally and maybe once or twice a month in a store.
Okay.
But I would say that's probably true for me as well, though it was definitely a process. Like, I used to go and buy things in stores, but then stores started to have less and less, like, indie kind of games and less PC games, and so it was really just the mainstream titles. and you could get the other stuff online, plus it's cheaper. So I've slowly started to go that way. And I'd say, I don't think I've bought a game in store for over a year probably at this point, because you can buy pretty much everything online.
Yeah, I go where the sales are. If there's a sale digitally, I think PSN and XBLA has been stepping up and trying to compete with them and having some nice, 50, 70% off sales. And if you drop something, you drop, cat shit down 70% off, I'll probably buy it.
Mm.
So, no,
that's
but
weird.
I still
wouldn't
hit the retail. You wouldn't? That's good.
I
smoke it.
I usually, when it comes to, buying games, it's like, I can't remember the last time I bought something digitally. I think it was Pac-Man Championship Edition DX, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time, I just buy stuff at retail. I visit a lot of thrift stores so I can get, $10 for an XBLA game versus $10 at, a thrift store or secondhand store, you can get a lot more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do want to say, based on this line of discussion, there is something that I think is weird, which is that when Amazon sells video games, right? But the most recent, so Catherine is coming out, and that's the most recent thing that I looked up on Amazon. And they have a deal right now where if you pre-order with them for the same price as you would pay for the game, you will get the little DVD, what is it, the DVD soundtrack or whatever, and the art book. And if you...
Not a CD soundtrack?
Yeah. So you get the CD soundtrack and you get the art book for the same price as just buying the game by itself. Now, mm-hmm. if you want to spend $80, so $20 more, you can get the super edition that has the art book and the soundtrack and a t-shirt and boxers and a pizza box.
And a pillowcase.
And a pillowcase and all this other swag. But I feel like most gamers, mostly unless you have a lot of money to throw around, you're not really going to want to go for a whole bunch of... Especially when you can get the art book and the soundtrack, which to me are the most valuable things I want out of that, for the exact same price as the game. The exact same price. To me, I feel like that hurts the deluxe edition because, why would I feel compelled to spend $20 more when I can spend the normal right. price of the game and get the stuff that I really want?
I think that they look at, and I know Atlas does that a lot, they have, the fans, and then they have the super hardcore fans that will pay mm-hmm. most
yeah.
anything. And they recognize that. I know for a D4, Disgaea 4 coming out, they have, normal edition which comes with a figurine. Or you can get, I don't know, maybe Blue, you could help me out, $160 edition which comes with all the figurines and all the knickknacks and stuff.
Yeah, but, I think it was 129 or 159, something like that.
Yeah,
it's
pretty pricey, but there are people that really love Disgaea.
But I don't understand why they wouldn't make a $65 thing even to get the soundtrack and the art book, because I would pay $5 or $10 more to get an art book and a soundtrack. But if I can pay the exact same price as the regular game, they're losing money they could have made. They could have made an extra $5, which is really nice of them. I'm not saying I'm not telling Atlas that you should do this and charge me more money. I'm just surprised that they did not make that.
What if
money.
It's a marketing scheme where you have, for $60 you get the game, you get the soundtrack, and then you get, an art book. And when I see that coupled together, I think that's a really good deal. I'm going to hop on Catherine, so to speak.
That's true.
Well, that the soundtrack CD for Ocarina of Time was actually what got me to think about picking up the 3DS version.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually the sale at Best Buy the week it came out, where if you bought the Ocarina of Time and a second 3DS game, you'd get a $25 gift card. I ended up getting The Sims 3 along with that because it was $25 anyways. And that paid for the gift card, paid for The Sims 3 and the soundtrack CD. I ended up price matching The Sims 3 with Toys R Us the following week, and I ended up I had a Reward Zone gift card on top of that, so that basically brought the price down to $35 and then down to $25. So basically I got Ocarina of Time 3D, The Sims 3, and the soundtrack CD for $25, and that was like the deal they took to push me over the edge, because normally I don't, unless it's something I really really want, I don't buy anything day one when it comes out, because I know it's going to be $40 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's no incentive to buy a game new at launch anymore because everything drops so damn quickly.
Yeah, but the whole reason they price it that way is because people are still going to buy it because they want it right away.
It's true.
But anyway, we should probably wrap this up, though, because we're running a little long.
Okay.
That's what she said.
Jesus.
So, if you would like to hear That's What She Said jokes, you can read them when we review video games at www.tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and podcasts. If you'd like to listen to other That's What She Said jokes in 140 characters or less, you can follow us on Twitter. Robert is at tech underscore gaming. I am Sean Nola with two N's. Adam, who is not here, is at Tide Gear. Sage is at Samu Rage, and Aaron is at Blue Swim.
Who?
Eric.
Aaron works for Sega. He is at Ruby Eclipse, if you want to follow him.
And Mark,
I want to work for Sega. But, I'll call myself Aaron if I can work at Sega.
Go for it. if you'd like to subscribe to us on iTunes, you can do that as well. Please leave us some comments there. Please, please, please get a Gravatar at www.gravatar.com because I'm tired of looking at those little Space Invader things when you guys comment. and then last but not least, I'm going to be taking kind of a hiatus for the next couple of weeks at least. My job is kind of getting out of control and I'm going to be traveling a lot. So I don't want to be doing this if I can't give it 110%. And I know that at least for a month, I'm not going to be able to do that. So I'm going to be more or less dark from you guys for a while. And I apologize for that. But hopefully I'll be able to get back in the game in the not too distant future.
And everybody loves you. So we hope you do too.
Yeah.
All right. Sean, before we sign off, I had one question both for myself and for any listeners who may have had this problem. A two-part question. If you already have a Gravatar and you want to link your Gravatar to techgaming.com, how does one do that? Do you know?
Well, you set up your Gravatar account, and then you just use the same screen name, I guess, when you're typing in at techgaming. It does it automatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have to make a new one for Samurage since my other one isn't Samurage.
I think so.
Okay, and is there any way to translate a me? Someone in real life asked me this. I don't know if anyone else has this question. Is there any way to translate your me, if you have a Nintendo Wii, into a Gravatar form?
If you can take a screen capture, I guess. I don't think so, though.
Or maybe as a QR code.
There's sites that emulate the Wii, or I'm sorry, the Mii Maker, where you can go, and they just take a screenshot of that and throw it up on Gravatar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there you go.
Wasn't there an old Atari game called Gravatar?
I think there was.
I think there was.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to confirm that.
Sean, I'm going to go.
Wait. We're going to miss you.
Yeah.
I'll be back eventually. It's just I didn't want to jerk you guys around. Like I said, I feel really bad that I haven't had enough time to write a review or write any editorials or thank God we didn't actually be able to record the podcast last week because I wouldn't have had time to edit it. And that's not fair to you guys. And until I can get my shit together, I really have no business doing this.
Okay. Mm. Metamucil will help keep your shit together.
Gross. Thanks. So gross. This is the sex and shit episode.
All the sex and shit episodes. Sage, where have you been?
I know, but normally it's I smell sex and candy wafting on the air. It's faint. But now, no, this is the I smell sex and shit. That's all this episode.
Or butt candy.
Or butt candy. Nice.
Oh, hey, sorry, you just sent me a message and it confused me.